This is WWE superstar Drew McIntyre, and you're listening to the WWE Podcast.
One that everybody wants, me.
Becky Lynch is going to WrestleMania.
Claymore!
Austin 316 says I just whipped your ass.
This is my iron.
You're going to acknowledge me.
All right, everybody, guys and girls, welcome back to another edition of the SmackDown Review. Right here on the WWE Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Michael Ritter. You can find me on Twitter at Michael5Ritter. And on Instagram at MichaelRitter5, also the host of the Football Function Podcast. We actually just dropped our week one preview, which is our first regular season episode. We covered every single thing you could possibly want to know about the weekend of football that's going to happen. So if you're excited about the week one action that's going to be happening this Sunday, then you definitely want to get prepared by checking out the Football Function Podcast that just dropped the week one preview. But with all that being said, we're here to talk about the SmackDown that aired on September 10th, 2021, and none other than New York City, Madison Square Garden. And this definitely had a big show feel to it from the start. Just the venue itself, you can already expect that Madison Square Garden is going to bring that, and the crowd definitely popped multiple times throughout the show. And if you just looked around, you could just see that there was no shortage of fans. I didn't see an empty seat in the entire crowd, even up in the nosebleeds. This place was packed. And if you just think back to some of the events that have happened there, Royal Rumbles, obviously WrestleManias. I was thinking about WrestleMania 20, especially during the Edge and Seth Rollins match, because Edge put Seth Rollins in a crossface. And I honestly thought that maybe Rollins was going to tap out. It was late in the match. And the crowd was really into it. It was at a point where it would have been believable if Edge made him tap out at that point. So kind of just, you know, crossface WrestleMania 20. If you know, you know. So definitely a little bit of a good moment there for wrestling fans and for wrestling sakes, obviously. I mean, just from a pure main event standpoint, it's no secret that I felt like the WrestleMania 20 main event where Benoit made Triple H tap out to the crossface and won the World Heavyweight Championship, that was one of my favorite moments in wrestling, arguably like the peak moment in wrestling that that I can at least speak for myself and say in my fandom, I really enjoyed that moment. So I guess just that's one memory I have from Madison Square Garden and all the other stuff that happened. That card for WrestleMania 20, obviously Kane versus Undertaker, Eddie Guerrero versus Kurt Angle. The list goes on and on. I also believe that Trish Stratus had a pretty big moment there whenever she turned on Chris Jericho and ended up like making out with Christian at the top of the stage. That was actually a pretty crazy moment. As a kid, that definitely broke my heart for old Jericho. I was like, man, come on, Trish. You're supposed to be better than this. You can't do my guy Jericho like that. But anyways, Madison Square Garden. This was a hell of a show. I mean, compared to last week, like I said, it was a little bit of a down episode of SmackDown. I don't feel like this episode was like that at all. It delivered. Obviously, Brock Lesnar was there. Becky Lynch was there. Edge was there. Roman Reigns was there. They definitely had the star power to make this episode feel special and to feel like a big show, and I feel like it certainly did that. And of course, we can't forget about the Demon, obviously, coming and making his first appearance on SmackDown ever, according to Michael Cole, at the very end of the show, so that's definitely a part that we'll get to. I'm doing this episode of the SmackDown review immediately after SmackDown. I'm not recording it in the morning, so I'm not looking at like a CBS breakdown or anything like that to go off of like for big ticket items that happened during the show. So I'm kind of just going off of what I remember, like off the top of my head, and maybe just a little bit of notes that I wrote down, and I'm just going to do it like that. So I'm going to wing this one. I feel like I'm good enough to do it like this. Oh yeah, by the way, I can't believe I was going to forget. This is actually my 50th SmackDown review. This was the 50th show that I've done here on the WWE Podcast as far as the SmackDown review. And I feel like it kind of lined up perfectly with the Madison Square Garden event and the feel to it. And this wasn't even supposed to happen technically, because if, for some of you who remember, if you've been listening to this show for a long time, back in January, I actually got COVID and I had to take a week off here. So that I didn't count that week. I skipped it, counted the week that I actually, you know, did a show. And this is going to be my 50th episode that we're doing here tonight. So definitely a little bit of a milestone here on the WWE podcast, because 52 weeks in a year. So that means I'm definitely creeping up on a year here. And it's been a hell of a year, honestly. I mean, I'm not there quite yet, but I definitely know that I'll get there here pretty soon. And I do feel like one thing I'll say about this year that I've been here on the WWE podcast is I truly feel like these past few episodes, or at least this past month or so, is whenever I've really been coming into my own, at least feeling more comfortable. I don't know if it's just the fact that I got a new microphone. My setup is a lot more official now as to where I used to be recording and some of the equipment that I was using. So maybe it's just, you know, a good supporting cast. I don't know. I mean, and I could be way off, but at least from my point of view here doing this show, I feel like the past month has been a little bit better, and I feel like I'm just now starting to get comfortable here. So I do think that the best is yet to come. I'm looking for 50 more episodes for sure. I think that I've already gone through, you know, Survivor Series season, Royal Rumble season, leading into WrestleMania. I mean, we've done this thing in the Thunderdome. The first year that I was doing it was pretty much without fans. So, I mean, we just got fans back here not that long ago. I mean, I was there whenever the first event with fans, not including WrestleMania, obviously, in Tampa, but most of you already know that. But the moral of the story is that we haven't been without fans, and I've been covering the show, so it's definitely these past few episodes with fans, you can tell the difference, and it's definitely a noticeable difference. The shows are better, and I'm enjoying it, so I definitely am looking forward to the future here on the WWE podcast. Like I've said multiple times, this podcast platform, network, whatever you want to call it, I mean, I do feel like it's a network at this point. I mean, by definition, why wouldn't it be? It has multiple shows coming from this one single show, you know? So, I mean, we got AEW, we got the SmackDown review, we got the NXT review, a separate Raw review, an entire weekend review, WWE rivalries, the highs and lows, and obviously the ever so popular mailbag. And that's honestly one of the best shows of the week, I will say. Just being completely objective here, I think that what that show's all about, as far as involving the fans or the listeners of the show, is a better word to say, because I mean, I include myself in that same category. I'm definitely a listener. I listen to other shows, the other hosts here on the podcast. They all bring their own little, their own individual thing, I guess you can say. Everybody's a little bit different. I don't think that there's anybody here on the show that's similar to somebody else. We might have similar opinions and beliefs, because I feel like, I mean, we've all been watching wrestling for a really long time, so we know what a good product looks like. So it's not easy to pull one over on us, I guess you could say. But anyways, with all that being said, definitely glad to be here for the 50th episode. Looking forward to the next one. But let's talk about this one. And like I said, I'm going basically off the top of my head so I can remember pretty much what happened. I know that for sure Roman Reigns started the show with the Usos, and we all know what happened there. But he basically was just coming out to the ring, and he was basically just talking about how himself and the Usos, aka the Bloodline, run New York. They run WWE, and because of that, they run Madison Square Garden. And it didn't take long before Brock Lesnar came out to a pretty loud ovation. I mean, that pop was pretty ridiculous. It's up there with some of the pay-per-view pops that we've got here recently. I'm not going to try to compare it or anything like that, but just, you know, Madison Square Garden, I feel like, let it all out on this one in particular. But he comes out to the ring and he tries to get in Roman Reigns' face. The Usos try to step in the way, which Brock Lesnar just laughs. I think that's funny that Brock Lesnar, he laughs at people a lot. I mean, he's even laughed at Roman Reigns, like, back during a lot of their other programs that they've had years back. And I don't know if that's like a genuine, I don't think like you are even in the same league as me. Like he genuinely laughs at them at the fact that they think that they can get up in his face and it's going to intimidate him or stop him from doing something if he really wanted to do something. So that's one thing that I pointed out here on Brock Lesnar. But the crowd's definitely behind him. A babyface Brock is something that I don't even know that I've ever seen. And just like his look, right? He came out with like a cut off plaid shirt with jeans on. in an old school like Vince McMahon black tank top underneath the shirt. I'm sure some of you know what I'm talking about. When Vince McMahon used to wrestle, he'd wear that black muscle shirt that was just really tight. Brock Lesnar was pretty much wearing something along those lines underneath the shirt that he was wearing. Eventually, he rips off the shirt. But he basically accuses Paul Heyman of knowing that he was going to be at SummerSlam. And he says, Paul, why didn't you tell Roman Reigns that I was going to be at SummerSlam? And that opens up a whole can of worms. And that's where the segment takes a little bit of a turn. Because it looks like Paul Heyman is going to deny knowing that Brock Lesnar was there. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, he actually does deny it. But Roman Reigns definitely looks like he doesn't trust him. He doesn't really know what to believe. So he just rips the championship out of Paul Heyman's hands. And him and the Usos leave the ring. And they kind of start walking up the ramp. Paul Heyman stays in the ring. He picks up a mic and he does his old shtick. The "my name is Paul Heyman and I'm the advocate." Or he specifically says, "For 20 years, I was the advocate for the reigning, defending, universal, whatever, heavyweight champion, Brock Lesnar." And Brock kind of, you know, he laughs, he plays it off. And that's just like old times, right, Paul? Then he gets up in his face and says, "Before Roman Reigns fires you, accept my challenge, give me an opportunity at the Universal Championship with Roman Reigns." And Paul Heyman, I'm not really sure exactly what he was going to say, but it looks like he is not going to say yes. I know that for sure. Brock Lesnar says, "You have the count of five to say yes." And he picks up his hands. The crowd starts to count down with him. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. He picks up Paul Heyman as if he's about to F5 him. But Roman Reigns comes into the ring and then hits him with a Superman punch. And the funny thing about this is you would expect Paul Heyman to, you know, just get away without a scratch here or anything like that. He technically takes like a Samoan drop because the Superman punch actually knocks Brock Lesnar off of his feet. So subsequently, Paul Heyman, who was still on Brock Lesnar's shoulders, falls down on the mat. And the Usos come in the ring. They start to hit Brock Lesnar with some super kicks. That really doesn't work. He knocks both of them down with like a smooth double clothesline. It looked beautiful to see Brock Lesnar do this in particular. I mean, it was just a fast little move. If you blinked, you could have missed it. But if you got to see it, then it just kind of reminded you just how powerful Brock Lesnar is and the shots that he takes. He makes these professional wrestlers literally look like regular human beings. And it's just crazy to think about. But basically, they eventually leave Roman Reigns, the Bloodline, Paul Heyman. They all get out of there, and apparently, like we would expect, Roman Reigns is going to accept or deny. He's going to acknowledge Brock Lesnar's challenge and give him an answer by the end of the show. We do get that answer, but it's not until the very end of the episode of SmackDown after the championship match, the tag team championship match between the Street Profits and the Usos. And we'll get there, but that's not until a few other things happen here. And I did find a little bit of like a table of contents, I guess you can say. It's just a list of things that happen. It doesn't have any bit of like analysis or anything like that. It just basically lifts off what happened. It says, here's the action from the night. And it just talked about Roman Reigns and the Usos who kick off the show. I just talked about that. So we'll move on to the next thing here. And that's the 10-man tag match. Which was, let me see if I can remember who was all in this match. Obviously, Shinsuke Nakamura, Rick Boogs were on the babyface team, as well as Big E and the Mysterio. So that makes that 5-man team. And then Sami Zayn, Apollo, Commander Aziz, and the Alpha Academy. So that's who made up the heel team. But one thing, or at least the most important thing that I took away from this entire segment here, it was actually pretty random. Trae Young. He came out, and obviously, I mean, if you're not really familiar with basketball, you probably have no idea who that is, but he should be a pretty popular name just with, like, mainstream media, especially with the NBA playoffs. He was actually a pretty big part, but just a little quick story here, a little backstory. If you don't really know why Trae Young showed up, who the hell is this guy? Well, he's a point guard for the Atlanta Hawks, and the Atlanta Hawks eliminated the New York Knicks from the playoffs just, like, 2-3 months ago, and it was actually pretty I'm trying to think of the word to use here, but I guess you could say chippy is a good word to use. Like if it's getting like push comes to shove, things are getting a little bit physical, especially in a sport like basketball. I mean, the crowd was absolutely letting Trae Young hear it. Pat McAfee actually alluded to an event where he actually got spit on, and that actually did happen. The fan that did that was banned from Madison Square Garden, and he can never show up there again. So that's definitely some serious stuff. And there was a lot of other stuff that happened too. But basically, he is the ultimate heel, according to the fan base in New York. And he was definitely playing into it, especially in the match. I mean, he was supporting the heel team, and he actually got involved and had a little bit of an interaction with Rey Mysterio. He was pulling his head down on the ropes, and he eventually got, you know, thrown out and sent backstage and kicked out of ringside by Charles Robinson. But I thought this whole thing was funny just from, like, my perspective. Obviously, you should know by now, or at least most of you who are longtime listeners know that I'm an Atlanta fan, not an Atlanta Hawks fan. But because I'm an Atlanta Falcons fan, I am familiar with, like, the fan base in Atlanta, and they perceive Trae Young as the ultimate babyface going into, like, a heel environment with, like, a raucous crowd that's going to be chanting everything and, like, chanting a lot of vulgar stuff and overcoming all that and ultimately winning. So it was kind of weird seeing him, like, in the heel role, because I totally view Trae Young as, like, a babyface. So that's completely off topic. I mean, he's not even a wrestler, but you guys know how it is. If you step foot in the wrestling environment, in the wrestling world, then, you know, all bets are off, and we can make these comparisons all we want. But anyways, after the Mysterios hit a double 619 on, gosh, I don't even remember who it was, but basically Big E ends up winning the match by, I'm not even sure if he used the big ending. I'm going to assume that he did, so he used his finishing move that's one of the worst ones in the entire company. To win the match. And he might not have used it, but I'm just going to assume if he finished the match, he most likely did. I do know that Big E is the one that got the win, though. And he cut a promo after that basically saying, if you have what I want, I'm going to come get it, referring to the WWE Championship, the Universal Championship, I don't even know, maybe the NXT Championship, or at least back a couple of years ago, if you won the Money in the Bank briefcase, they would definitely let the crowd and the people at home know that the NXT championship was included there, and they could cash in on that as well if they wanted to. Definitely don't think that's going to happen these days with NXT going through a complete facelift and culture change, getting old Vince McMahon and Bruce Pritchard involved in the creative and everything going on there. And I definitely feel sorry for the NXT fans, because it did feel different. It felt like it was its own brand, its own, almost its own company. Like, it was completely different from WWE. Whenever superstars and wrestlers from NXT would come up to the main roster, it felt special, especially if you knew who they were and, you know, you were actually a fan of them. If they came up to your specific brand, similar to Toni Storm, you know, whenever she came up to SmackDown, I was extremely excited. Even Aleister Black, just dating it back a little bit, obviously he's not with the company anymore, but just speaking of, you know, recent call-ups that definitely I felt like were meaningful to me. But anyways, continuing on here in the show, we get a contract signing with Becky Lynch and Bianca Belair. And Becky Lynch basically says that she didn't like that Adam Pearce forced her to have the match at Extreme Rules, and that she wanted to do it whenever she was ready. Who knows? She could have done it here in Madison Square Garden tonight, and maybe Adam Pearce ruined that and robbed the fans of another championship match on free TV. But I feel like the wrestling gods said, no, no, we're not going to let that happen. We're going to make this championship match feel a little bit more special, have a little bit more build to it, and let segments like this happen to make it feel a little bit more juicy and let Becky get more established as this heel. And she eventually does say, all right, you want it, you got it, you're going to get your championship match. I'm telling you right now, it's going to be the exact same ending. She signs the contract, and she walks away, and they play Bianca Belair's music. But hey, before she walks away, I almost forgot, she throws that, I don't know what it is. It's like I've stumbled on this before on a contract signing in the past where I didn't know exactly what to call that black briefcase, and that's kind of what I landed on last time too, just ultimately called it a briefcase. And she throws it at Bianca Belair's face, and she catches it like perfectly and closes it. But if she wouldn't have caught it perfectly, it definitely would have hit her in the face. So I didn't know if that was like a planned thing and Bianca Belair just reacted and caught the thing and just saved herself from getting hit in the face. I don't know, but I did think that was a nice little touch to end that quote-unquote contract signing before Becky Lynch walked backstage. But obviously she was a little upset that she's a champion and they didn't play her music and they played Bianca Belair's music. Ultimately irrelevant. We don't really see any more of these women the remainder of the night. But the match is made official. The contract is signed. So at Extreme Rules, we're going to get Becky Lynch, Bianca Belair, and an official match for the SmackDown Women's Championship. Now, up next is my personal favorite part of the entire show. And it was Edge's possible last match ever in Madison Square Garden. I mean, it's very likely that this is going to be his last match there. It was his first match in 11 years at Madison Square Garden. So he finally gets a chance to come out and embrace this crowd in the arena. He got a massive pop as well up there with what Brock Lesnar got. So definitely those were the two moments in the show where the crowd absolutely went crazy. And actually there was a third moment, and we'll get there a little bit later. But this was the second moment in the show where the crowd absolutely popped. And the match did exactly what you would expect. Edge and Seth Rollins, part two, is what it was promoted as. And it really wasn't breaking news or anything like that. But I talked about it last week on the show where I said Seth Rollins was likely going to win this match because you didn't want to have Edge beat him twice. But I feel like they wanted to add a little something where I don't know if it's trying to write Edge off TV like in a storyline way or if he's actually going to take a little bit of time off and then maybe come back when he gets drafted to Raw. And that's whenever he comes back from injury. But after a long, pretty good match where there were a lot of near falls, and these two are basically trying to do each other's moves. Like Edge did the pedigree, Seth Rollins did Beth Phoenix's move on Edge, and a lot of other things. They were just kind of, you know, taking a page out of each other's playbook to get through this match, and it was a long one. Like I said, this was probably my favorite part of the show, obviously match of the night. But the ending of this match, Edge wouldn't go down. It ultimately took Seth Rollins doing a little bit of a low blow, and that's what gives Seth Rollins the opportunity to really take control of this match. He hits Edge with a couple of super kicks to the face. Edge continues to get up. Seth Rollins continues to hit him with a super kick, eventually screams, "Why won't you die?" and then hits him with a stomp. And the commentary team were really scared that this was going to be like a career-threatening move, the stomp to Edge. And I guess I understand. I mean, obviously the neck problems, but I thought that maybe Edge has hit a stomp on him before. It was like he had resisted and he had never done it. But he did hit a little bit of a neck breaker and then hit the stomp. So it looked like, I guess, they were maybe trying to point out that Seth Rollins was actually targeting the neck. So trying to get a little bit more evil, I don't know. I mean, a little bit more gruesome, a little bit more willing to do whatever it takes to get the win. And that's what he did. He hit the stomp, put his boot right on the back of Edge's neck, and Edge was left motionless as Seth Rollins made the pinfall. And the announcers were kind of mentioning how Edge just wasn't doing anything. He was just laying there. His body was just lifeless. And Seth Rollins was kind of sitting there just staring at him, kind of similar to how he was looking at Rey Mysterio whenever his eye fell out of his head, supposedly. And Seth Rollins really just doesn't know what to say. He doesn't know what to think. That's what he says backstage in an interview with, I believe it might have been Kayla Braxton. I'm not 100% sure if it was her, but Edge eventually gets carted off. Rey Mysterio's there. Adam Pearce is there. They're kind of wheeling him backstage, and he eventually gets in an ambulance and leaves. So this is obviously going to keep Edge off of TV for a little while. I'm not sure what we're going to get with Seth Rollins, if we get anything as far as Extreme Rules goes. They might kind of put a little bit of a hold on Seth. Don't feel the need to get him involved in a storyline this close to the draft. Maybe somebody comes over from Monday Night Raw. I hope Seth Rollins doesn't leave and goes over to Monday Night Raw. I definitely want to keep Seth over here on SmackDown. I feel like he's really like a mainstay and a cornerstone to this brand. And he's one of the most important superstars on the entire roster. So I definitely hope that he stays and maybe get a guy like, I don't know, Drew McIntyre. Somebody who comes over from Raw that Seth Rollins could maybe have a little bit of a feud with leading up to Survivor Series. But I could be getting ahead of myself, and Edge could come back soon with a vengeance. I mean, they are 1-1, so I do expect there to probably be a third match where we get a true winner in this program. But let's see, continuing on here, I think this might be the last thing, and it is the SmackDown Tag Team Championships, the Street Profits versus the Usos. And Let's see. This was kind of another one of those matches that you knew they put on the card just to deliver a quote-unquote five-star match. If you're going to put Seth Rollins and Edge on this card, and then you put the Usos and the Street Profits, you know you're going to have four to five-star matches at least. This one actually ended in a disqualification, though, because Roman Reigns gets involved whenever the Street Profits look like they were about to really put the Usos away. This match goes on for probably about 10 minutes, though, before it gets to this point. So there were a handful of momentum shifts, I guess you can say, during this match to lead Roman Reigns to feel like he needed to get involved before the Usos lost their tag team championships back to the Street Profits. And I really didn't want to see the Street Profits win these championships. It's not that I have anything against them, but whenever they mentioned that the Street Profits had the championships for over a year before this match, I was like, are you kidding me? Like, they really had them for that long? Because, I mean, if you think back to their championship run, a lot of it obviously had to do with the Viking Raiders and that whole I'm better than you at multiple different sports like basketball. I don't even remember exactly what they called that whole little program that they had there. It wasn't very good, though. I think we could all agree there and say that it was the least bit entertaining. We all kind of wanted to see the championships be used a little bit better. They weren't even wrestling. So I feel like the Street Profits didn't have a good track record with those championships. Maybe another opportunity over on SmackDown. I know that was on Raw whenever that happened. So maybe an opportunity on SmackDown is what they need to put a little bit better, quote-unquote, taste in our mouth, I guess you can say, from their last championship run. I think that maybe we can get a little bit better stuff from the Street Profits, but not right now, not while we have all the championships on the Bloodline or in the Bloodline faction. So obviously Roman Reigns is going to get involved like the Usos did for him so many times, specifically Jey Uso over the past year. Roman Reigns gets to return the favor. And he chokes out Montez Ford. Montez Ford sells this beautifully, just with the way his body was kind of flopping around. His legs were just going up in the air, and eventually just, you know, his body just goes limp. And he throws him down. Roman Reigns grabs the microphone, and he eventually says, all right, Brock Lesnar wants it. He can get it. I will deal with him as soon as I'm finished with Finn Balor. So we all know that's probably going to happen at Crown Jewel. That's the next pay-per-view. This definitely won't be a SmackDown, Raw, free TV championship match. They're definitely going to put this on a pay-per-view. It feels like a Crown Jewel match. It sucks if it is because I would want to watch it. I'm not going to be able to watch the Crown Jewel pay-per-view. So I would have to watch a replay or just something whenever I got home. I'm all right with that. But, I mean, I definitely would rather it be at a pay-per-view like Survivor Series or something. Let's get a little bit of a build here. But I think we could all expect Crown Jewel to be the place that this match actually takes place. But this wasn't the end of the show. The lights go out. Roman Reigns obviously just mentioned Finn Balor's name. We get the red lighting. The heartbeat was starting to play. Smoke starts to fill up the stage. And as you could expect, Finn Balor, aka the Demon, is the one who shows up. And he comes to the ring and he does a little bit of a stare down. Obviously his entrance takes about 3 or 4 minutes, which is one of the best entrances in all of pro wrestling. This is just one of the best ones that I can remember. I mean, just whenever you're talking about the face paint and all that stuff. But Finn Balor comes to the ring. He stares down Roman Reigns. He stares at the Usos. He looks at the championship. It was just nice to see the Demon back. It's been a while. Obviously, we mentioned a little bit earlier, the first time we've seen him on SmackDown. So I'm looking forward to this. Roman Reigns versus the Demon. We already know probably what's going to happen in this match, but it's going to be fun to see the build-up. And you really, I mean, if Roman Reigns is already kind of booking a championship match after this, I mean, are we really in the wrong for assuming that Roman Reigns is going to just automatically win this match? I mean, even though it's the Demon and the Demon has a really successful record, I don't think that it's too crazy for us to believe that it's going to be a, you know, 100% chance that Roman Reigns wins. I mean, he's already got a match basically agreed upon with Brock Lesnar. I don't really like the timing of all this, the order that they're booking this. Finn Balor is definitely deserving of an actual program and a feud that it's believable that he can win the championship, and especially if you're bringing out the Demon. I don't want to see him waste something like this, but anyways, we're going to get it. Elimination Chamber. I don't even know what the hell that was. Jeez, Elimination Chamber is not for a while. Extreme Rules. Maybe it's the E, the beginning of the pay-per-view starting with E is maybe what threw me off there. That's what I'm going to say, just so I don't feel like an absolute stooge to close the show. But that is the SmackDown review. I'm looking forward to coming back next week. Like I said, this was a good episode of SmackDown, so it's always easy to review the show whenever they have a product like that, whenever it's just easy to follow and there's storylines that get developed and just good matches. It's easy to hop on here immediately after SmackDown's over and, you know, deliver this podcast for you guys. So I hope you enjoyed it. Definitely hope you will continue listening if you are a first-time listener. If you are a regular listener, thank you for making this part of your weekly routine, and I hope you will continue to do that and also continue to listen to the other shows and support this one. Maybe subscribe to Patreon if you want to get an ad-free experience. Very cheap. It's $1 a month. It's definitely a bargain. You get a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, you get an invite to a Discord server where you can communicate with all of us and a bunch of other listeners whenever we are discussing pay-per-views and big events that are going on as they're really happening. It's like a little bit of a live chat room. If you're familiar with it, then you know how fun those things are. So definitely one reason to get Patreon, not just the ad-free experience and all the other episodes that you get to listen to without those pesky ads. So with all that being said, I hope you guys will come back next week. But as for me, I am going to enjoy this weekend of college football, NFL football. I mean, this is the time of year that I live for. So doing this podcast, having my own football podcast, it's definitely in my comfort zone now, like I was saying a little bit earlier. So thank you guys once again for listening. Walk passionately in the direction of your dreams, and I'll talk to you soon.